Okay, so hello. I'm Alerza Shabani. I'm from UC Berkeley, working with Birgit Haweli, and I'm going to tell you about an ongoing project in our group that we are studying to see how cavity QED or circuit QED can help with tomography or spectroscopy tasks. So I'm showing some unpublished results. We are writing the paper now, so we'll be happy to have your comments. This work is done in collaboration with Jan Rudin, who is also a postdoc in our group. He will be here, I think, next week. And so let me. Okay, so this is an outline of my talk. I tried to squeeze it in 45 minutes, and but to stop me if I get too much into the technical part. So I tell you the motivation why we become interested to look into this problem. Then I tell you about how to do dispersive measurement in a circuit QED, or you can think of the cavity QED. So I'm going to use words circuit and cavity, exchange these two words, but it depends in what regime. We are in the microwave regime or optical regime. And so I tell you the decoherence model that we consider. The problem is this. I'm considering a complex system. Complex system can have, a multi-component system or a multi-level molecule or a quantum system in general. And I want to consider some type of general decoherence model for that. That can have a non-Markovian behavior, or it can be a strong. So I want to couple this system to a cavity or a quantum resonator and to see what I can gain from this type of coupling. So I'll tell you about the decoherence model that I consider. Then I tell you the formalism that we developed for doing continuous measurement on a complex systems. And up to here, you'll see the formalism. Then the last two parts are about the result and the advantage that we take. What I call the wave function video camera. I mean doing quantum assay tomography in a continuous way. And lastly, the last part is about spectroscopy advantage of continuous measurement and how we can detect non-Markovian behavior or non-Markovian feature of our decoherence by doing continuous measurement. So for the motivation part, actually it comes from our collaboration with two different groups at Berkeley. One group is the Irfan Sadiqi's group in the physics department. They have a nice circuit QD system. They couple a superconducting qubit to a microwave resonator. And they have very neat measurement setup that they can implement a continuous measurement. So this is their first result on observing quantum jumps in a superconducting qubit. And last year they could implement a quantum feedback control on their qubit. Basically they stabilize Rabi oscillation for a single qubit. So we are thinking of doing some theory work in the case that they have a multi-qubits that are interacting with each other, and also if there is some non-Markovian decoherence in their system that they consider. Specifically, they are one of the experiments that they are doing now, developing, is about coupling quantum dots to a resonator. And we know that quantum dots are prone to non-Markovian decoherence. So this was one motivation for us to do this theory work. The other group that we are collaborating is in a different building, in chemistry department, Garam Felleming, who is doing nonlinear spectroscopy, nonlinear electronic spectroscopy. And this was the first group who observed the coherence bit in photosynthetic complexes. And for a while thinking about what's the sense of the nonlinear spectroscopy, basically when you have a system here that you want to study its electronic state, what you do is that you shine many pulses to that system and you look at the response. But in the quantum mechanical language, what we are doing is that we have a fixed observable mu. That's the total dipole moment of the system, and we want to measure that observable. So that becomes some inherent limitation to nonlinear spectroscopy, that we cannot change the observable that we have. And that's the reason that actually we do nonlinear, we look at the nonlinear response of this system. So one interesting problem to look at, that can we somehow engineer a different observable for electronic set? My talk is mostly about the microwave regime, because we can do continuous measurement in microwave regime, but I have a couple of slides just to discuss some idea, because this meeting is supposed to be for discussions of can we do something in electronic regime in 100 terahertz or not. So this was the motivation for our work. I start with get into more details of the work. First, I tell you about how we do dispersive measurement in a cavity or circuit cavity. And the motivation for that is this. I first tell you, just review the basic of what is generalized quantum measurement. So the goal is that how we can tune or change the observable measurement setup. So if you want to measure some observable OS, some arbitrary observable, a general way to do that that's different from the orthodox standard projective measurement is that we have a system. Instead of coupling the system directly to our measurement device, what we do, we consider a second quantum system, that's the probe, and we make them interact with the system. And we like it to have this, the interaction between the system and probe have this nice product form, some coefficient G, the observable OS that we're looking for, and some operator P of the probe. And what we do is that we do our projective measurement on the P, on the probe. In this way, we can indirectly get information about the state of the system. And in the limit of that G factor here, that's the coupling strength, we can change it from the strong measurement to weak measurement. So in the limit of a small G, we can implement the weak measurement limit that also I want to talk about it in this talk. So we want to do this in the, we want to implement this scenario in a cavity setup. How we do this? Okay, so just a review on the, what do we mean by cavity, just cavity QED. So by cavity, we usually have in mind a single, or in some cases, people have looked at the multimode quantum harmonic oscillators. In optical regime, we can implement that by some geometric cavity, for example, picture for a Fabry-Pérot cavity. Therefore, that our two-level system gets coupled to the one ascending mode of this cavity. And in the microwave regime, the old-fashioned, old means that until 2 years ago, they were considering 1D resonators. So this is an example of 1D resonator. And this small greenish box here is a Cooper pair box that's our qubit. So in this way, you can couple your qubit to understanding wave of this microwave resonator. Or in the last 2 years, they have developed the 3D version of this microwave resonator. So these are two examples of this of the cavity QED or circuit QED in the microwave regime. So some equations. So how we read out the state of the single qubit in the dispersive regime? So we start from the Hamiltonian of the James Cumming Hamiltonian, the standard Hamiltonian of the coupling a cavity resonator to a qubit. That the coupling in the rotating frame is given by this XX coupling between our cavity and the qubit. And dispersive regime is defined in the regime that this qubit and the cavity are off-resonance. So off-resonance in this, even by this condition that this coupling G is much, much weaker than the difference between the frequency of the cavity and the frequency of the resonator. And you can see that by some, in some rotating frame, that's called the dispersive frame. You can diagonalize this James Cummings Hamiltonian in this form. So let's for a moment look at the, see what's the meaning of this Hamiltonian. Basically, you see that the frequency of the qubit is modified by this factor G squared over delta. And the delta is this difference between these two frequencies. And what's interesting for us is that the frequency of the cavity is effectively modified by this factor, that G squared over delta sigma z. This tells you that basically the frequency of the cavity depends on the state of the qubit. So in this way, if somehow I can measure this frequency, or related to that, the phase of the photons in the cavity, I can gain information about my system, and I can measure sigma z. So that's how we can measure sigma z observable and then and a single qubit. And this is an example of the transmission spectrum of this one of a qubit, superconducting qubit coupled to a microresonator. That you can see that depending on the state of this qubit is down or up, you see a shift in the, if omega r is the frequency of the bare cavity, then you see a shift proportional to G squared over delta T. And based off this, you can decide basically what's your state of your system. So the first step, I've generalized this for a complex system. So I don't have, I think, much time to get into details of that, but so I just give you the general picture. So let me go back, and I write a generalized Hamiltonian for the arbitrary quantum system, and I come up with some generalization of this dispersive rotation, and you'll see how I diagonalize the effective Hamiltonian. So this is the case of the multi-qubit system, and here I consider, I write it as an electric field, but you can think of it as a spin system coupled to a magnetic field. The same formalism holds. And my general Hamiltonian have this form, so I guess just consider the, in the rotating frame, I have this coupling where pi is the generalized, say, the dipole moment of this, my complex system that has also, that includes the coupling factor. So this would be my Hamiltonian, but I want to diagonalize this part of it, the interaction part. So to do that, I consider a generalized dispersive regime that's given by this inequality. The physical meaning of this inequality is that I have multi-levels. So what I do is that I bias my cavity in the far from all of those resonance frequencies of my system. So in this way, I can get into a dispersive regime. And in this frequency regime, I can diagonalize this Hamiltonian. This would be diagonal form of my Hamiltonian. That you see that the interaction part between the system and cavity has this diagonal form. What's the meaning of this? That the meaning of this is exactly like the case of the single qubit that I had, that the frequency of the effective frequency of the cavity is modified that would be proportional to the value of this or expectation value of this observable OS. So basically, what this setting allow me to measure this observable OS of my complex system. And this is the form of the observer that I'm going to measure in this system. And I'll come back to this in the last slide. The feature of this observable is that I can tune this, I can change this operator x. What was x? This is my x operator that I defined here. Actually, by only changing the frequency of the cavity, I can change the observable that I have. So this is one feature that I'll come back to this when I want to talk about the continuous state tomography. So that was about the coupling, and just some introductory slide of on how I measure my phase of the photons that are coming out, because measuring phase, you can gain information about the change of the frequencies. And this is some standard quantum optic setup that in order to measure the phase, instead of directly measuring the population of the photons that are coming out, we combine it with the photons with some local oscillator. Basically, we do homodyne detection. And in this way, we can gain information about the phase of the leaking qubits. And this is a master equation for the leakage out of the cavity. And this would be the detector current. So what I measure is that I gain information about the phase of the photons that are coming out, and of course it comes with some white noise of the detector. So I get some, I record some noisy data. So this is some standard quantum optic technique. So I have different components now. I have the interaction between the cavity and complex system. I have this, this is a setup how to measure the phase. The next part is rather technical, is about how I introduce the decoherence dynamics. I want to have some decoherence, right? Okay, so here.
Question before you get into that.
Yeah.
So you set up the problem like this, and the sort of G over delta correction to this story from your transform. Effectively, when I do this transform,
okay,
my decay mode A picks up a small admixture associated with the coherence of the qubit.
Yes.
So presumably in those leakage equations, there's a G over delta correction.
Yeah, exactly, right. We all have those corrections. We have to add that.
So this model you wrote down is...
This is just bare cavity, right?
A in the original frame,
Yes, in the original frame, and right. We need to modify all of those terms. So, and the decoherence model. So I quickly give I tell you the one of the motivation why we consider non-Markovian decoherence. This is a recent experiment that's a coupling quantum, a double quantum dot to a microwave resonator that basically they look at the absorption spectrum of the quantum dot, and that doesn't, what the spectrum that they see doesn't fit to the Markovian model. So they suggest maybe that's because of the non-Markovian features of the decoherence of the quantum dots. And also there are other motivation for why we consider some non-Markovian decoherence. So we want to go beyond Born Markov approximation. I consider a bosonic, or it can be generalized to fermionic bath of harmonic oscillators, and I assume that my bath has a Gaussian fluctuations. So I have a linear coupling between my system and bath. So S is the system operator, and the B is the just the operator acting on the bath. So we see this is Hamiltonian for the bath mode density. For a bath of for a bosonic bath. And so there is an exact solution for this model. This is the solution is known as a hierarchy equation of motion, and next slide I'll describe that. But I don't know for what reason it is this. In the physics community, this is developed by chemical physics, but the physics community, I've not seen this. There's much use of this formalism. It's very strong formalism. And so before I'm going to tell you what's that formalism, just some basic formulation that I assume I told you I have a Gaussian fluctuation of the bath. And I can model this fluctuation or the correlation times by considering some bath spectral distribution of my system, and the equation is given by this famous equation of the correlations. So this is the history of this hierarchy formalism. It's originally developed for a particular kind of the bath spectral density, that's ohmic with some Lorentzian Dirac profile, but recently it's generalized to some arbitrary bath spectral density. I give you one. This is the master equation that I'm. I want to show you. It's called. This is the simplest form of that. Actually, in the limit of the high temperature. Well, maybe I should define some of these parameters. The gamma is the bandwidth of my environment. The larger bandwidth is more Markovian, and the lambda is the coupling S ranks between the system and the environment. For this particular spectral density, at the limit of high temperature, the form of those hierarchy equations is rather simple. You can see it here. So basically, this tells you that the variation of the density metric of the system is coupled to to the change of a number of the auxiliary operator sigma n. And so this is the exact solution. If we go to the infinite, consider infinite number of this auxiliary operator, this is the exact solution to the model that I have, without any approximation, any perturbative approximation or limitation of the how much non-Markovian is my model. So this is a rather powerful master equation to work with. But practically, we usually truncate it at some point. That's given by this criteria. It means that if I have a smaller gamma S, I have a more serious non-Markovian behavior, then I have to go to higher and higher levels of this hierarchy. So this was about an equation that I'm going to use. Now I want to combine all of these components. I have a coupling between system and cavity. I have a leakage. And I have a decoherence. So I don't have time to go through the details of this, but the next thing I want to tell you, I don't have much time, but I want to give you this, tell you the formalism that we develop or we drive for continuous measurement of this complex system in the presence of this general decoherence model. Again, just a simple picture to get an idea how it looks. I have a system coupled to a cavity. System has its own environment. That's a non-Markovian environment. And the cavity is coupled to a reservoir. And this dashed line is telling you that when you go to dispersive regime and you make this correction, back to your question, you'll see all this small correction and the cross-coupling between all of these elements that I have. And what I assume is that my environment has this Gaussian fluctuation, and I make the same assumption as for the reservoir. So what I can do, I can write the hierarchy equation for both system and cavity. When I consider this joint, so my total environment would be this environment of the system plus reservoir. So I write down the hierarchy equations for that, and I do some standard thing that I consider I want to eliminate the cavity degrees of freedom. So I do cavity elimination in the strong leakage limit of the cavity. So in that case, what I measure is only information about the system part. So I get rid of the cavity. So again, this is just a remind. Okay, so this tells you before showing the formalism that we derive. This is the formalism for the case of I have a Markovian decoherence for a single qubit. Basically, we measure this is the current of the detector with some noise, and this is the conditional evolution of the single qubit. That's condition on the outcome of the detector. You see, it has this stochastic form, a deterministic part. That includes the back action of the measurement and a stochastic term. So this is a messy equation. So this is what we derive for our case. So we have a complex system with some complicated decoherence dynamics, and we are continuously measuring that. So this is what we call the stochastic hierarchical equations of motion. And so I don't go through the details of that because I can later show you details. So I rather go to the I want to go to the results to see what results we gain. So the first part is about the continuous state tomography. So I want to talk about the limitation of the state or limitation of state tomography, or why it is difficult for some large system to do, is that when you have a d-dimensional system, We need d squared minus one independent realizable observables to measure to have a full process tomography. For some physical systems, especially in solid-state systems, we have a fixed observable, OS, that we can measure. So the trick to have a new independent observable is that to apply some unitary on them. Before doing measurement, we apply some unitary. So basically, we need d squared minus one of these independent unitaries to get the full complete set of observables. And it's easy to see if you want to, maybe for a single shot or single time measurement of the state, that's easy. But if I want to measure the evolution of the system over the time, I have to discretize my time. At each time, I have to repeat all these unitaries. So it's a large overhead of the experiment. But continuous weak measurement can help us in the sense that if we can tune the observable that we have, then if I tune my observable and I measure it once in one round, then I basically I've measured that observable for the whole time without any need to repeat that at different discrete times. So what I can do is that basically I tune my observable to some certain fixed observable. Then for that fixed observable, I repeat this continuous measurement to gain basically get rid of this noisy part of that. So what I left with is this equation, and this would be dynamics. And the expectation, basically, the current of the detector is just after averaging over many trajectories, it basically gives me the expectation value of the observer that I have or the whole time that I'm measuring that. So this tells us that if we can tune this observable OS, so we can just continuously doing this measurement, doing this state tomography for just d squared minus one different tuning of this observable. So in that way, we get rid of this redundancy that here we have when we apply controls to change the observable. But there is a trade-off here that continuous measurement, you have back actions. So that's a new bad thing that's this is one of the limitations of this formalism, but actually, you can make that back action weaker and weaker by doing having a weaker measurement. You can have a lower back action effect. So, but that's the overhead, especially for please.
Can you quantify?
No, we haven't done that.
Sorry?
We haven't done that. Right. So, but that's important. So, okay. Also here, okay, so here we need to repeat this, we do many repetition, right, to gain a good statistics here, right, for some certain precision. That's also the case here. Here we don't, so even fixing O alpha, the operator O alpha, still we need, because for the projective measurement, you also need to have many repetition in the ensemble.
That seems to be easy to
quantify. Right. Here, no, we haven't done that. So that's a new, well, we get some advantage here, but there is some disadvantage also here, right? And this is about how we tune the observable. I told you that this is the observable that we are measuring, and this X operator, I didn't have time to spend on that, but it's defined in this form. So you can see that by tuning the frequency of my cavity, I can change this observable. In the optical, for optical cavity, maybe it's not easy because you need to geometrically change the structure of your cavity. But for circuit QD, it's easy. You just, this is what they can do, actually. They can change the frequency of their resonator by varying some, they have some circuitry system that using that, they can change the frequency of their resonator. So what we looked at is that how many, using this format that we develop, how many independent observables we can measure. in the case of the, so we found some maximum possible values of the observable in the case that, well, if you have a kind of complex in the sense that there is no symmetry between the coupling of the, if you have, for example, many qubits, if they are coupled symmetrically to the same qubit, you cannot distinguish them. But the coupling, if the coupling are not symmetric, then this is the maximum number of observable that independent observable that you can gain through this formalism. That's the d squared minus d plus one. And I want to skip this part. What do I mean by a spatial resolution? But so this is a still less than the d squared minus one, but for the larger scale, if you we still gain this factor of the d squared for, so we are very close to have a complete state tomography. So that so this was part about the state tomography, and I skipped this slide. So just a quick about what next we want, we are interested to do the, to look at is that considering a multimode cavity, for example, this is an example of a 3D resonator that is coupled to a transmon qubit, and it's easy to kind of to turn it into a bimodal cavity. So what we can do is that, well, what we are interested to look at is that to have a simultaneous measurement of the two observable for a single qubit. And so this is the next thing to do. And the last part, I want to tell you about the spectroscopy aspect of the continuous measurement. So just we just considered the single qubit coupled to this microwave, coupled to our cavity. And for the case of the, if you have some just Markovian decoherence of the qubit, and if we drive the qubit, if we drive the cavity continuously, then this is in the limit of the continuous drive of the cavity. If you look at the spectrum of the current through this continuous measurement, the spectrum will have a peak around the Rabi oscillations of the qubit. So basically, when you drive the cavity, you indirectly induce some Rabi oscillation on your qubit, and you'll see a peak around the Rabi oscillations. So this is fair for the case of the Markovian decoherence. So what we did is that we consider our non-Markovian model, and so this is the result from the non-Markovian equation that we developed. So what we look at is our set of parameters we consider, and we so again we have a single qubit. It's coupled to a non-Markovian decoherence. It has a non-Markovian decoherence. We do continuous measurement, and we look at the spectrum of this the outcome measurement of this system, and you'll see that as I change gamma, the larger gamma means more Markovian, the smaller gamma means more non-Markovian feature. So I start to see a shift in the peak of this spectrum that I have. So this becomes a very easy test to go in the lab to see if there is some non-Markovian decoherence associated to my system or not. Just do this using a spectrometer and to see if you observe any shift and compared to the Rabi oscillation that you have, the Rabi frequency that you have induced on your system. And how much time I have? Should we wrap up probably?
Well, your talk is open since I think 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay, good.
And you are into discussion time, so.
Okay, so this is some, okay, so this was the one spectroscopy features of this continuous measurement. So I don't have time to. We have more simulations to for different regime or different modelings of the Bass spectral density. We consider a spectral density that is not ohmic, but so I'll also skip that part. I can show you later the plots. So, but I want to go one slide back because I missed one point to mention. Why we think this is interesting for us is that. this would be, so this is when we measure this spectrum, this is the spectrum of the current detector current. And if you compare it to a case of molecular spectroscopy, that we are doing linear spectroscopy, you see that the response of this molecular system is very, very similar, at least looking at the equation, to what we gain in the continuous measurement formalism. So the only difference is that here we have some, because of the measurement is noisy, we get some non-zero noise level. But this is the one, just comparing this to it, this tells us that, we want to continue this work to see more features, a spectroscopy feature of continuous measurement. So just the last couple of minutes, I want to, again, repose this question. Sure.
So if I'm to understand this correctly, you're talking about a scenario in which you're driving the system with Rabi oscillations. So the Rabi energy scale is roughly the biggest energy scale other than the intrinsic frequency in the problem. Omega R is big compared to everything else there, right?
Okay. So you're saying that?
Everything but gamma.
Okay.
So, I'm kind of curious why, in this highly driven regime, you don't see the Malo triplet coming up.
Can you repeat that? I think.
I'm trying to understand why you don't see the Malo triplet. So if I take a dipole and I drive it under Rabi oscillations, I get side bends.
Right.
Saturation.
Well, okay. So the Rabi oscillation is the Rabi oscillation is a
linear response.
Yeah.
The heavily driven system, I get the Malo side bends. So where are they here?
So the Rabi oscillation is a low frequency. It's the megahertz. Well, the system dynamic, the frequency of the system is gigahertz. So this at the megahertz. So it's a very.
What power structure density I'm looking at? Because I'm under the impression you're looking at power structure density of coherence, right, of the dipole.
Is it due to the nature of the decoherence that they have?
No, I mean, it would have shown up in the previous graph, too.
It's a good point.
It's curious where the Malo triplet went.
You would certainly expect that resonance fluorescence.
Okay, I don't know. Let's discuss it.
I mean, all that I'm saying is that the dipole becomes correlated with itself at Rabi periods later, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the correlation function, you see peaks associated with that.
Right. Maybe if we increase the window, we may see that. Right. We haven't looked at that. Right. That's a good point. Yeah.
You only have a central peak.
Yes. We only have a central peak. Yeah. We haven't looked at that. Yeah. Okay. So. Just I want to repose this question that what we can do in the electronic regime. The electronic regime is the next slide. I can tell you that the time scale is very, very short. It's hundreds of femtosecond time scales. So we cannot do continuous measurement because the one major limitation is the response time of the detectors. That's order of nanoseconds. So. But the idea is interesting to look at is that can we somehow do a single shot measurement? We send the photons in and we look at the change of the phase of these photons. And by just repeating that and collecting enough number of the information of the photons, can we somehow implement this idea of the spectroscopy with tunable, observable or not? So this is the one interesting area to continue this work. So coming to conclusion, again, we developed this formalism for continuous measurement that can include a general decoherence model. And we found this easy test to detect the non-Markovian nature of the dynamics. The application can have a lot of a spectroscopy application for EPR, ESR, that is also suggested in this experiment. And basically, this experiment is about the molecular rotation spectroscopy, but you can also think of it as an EPR, ESR, or even NMR, because There are some work by Caltech group that they coupled a mechanical resonator to nuclear degrees of freedom. So in principle, this kind of coupling is possible. Can we do it in NMR or not? That would be interesting to look at. So I talk about this idea for continuous state tomography. So one direction to go is that to combine in compressed sensing that I want to talk about, and we published two work for quantum process tomography and Hamiltonian identification. Combining compressed sensing with continuous state tomography. One ongoing project is that Han Li is working on that. Now we have this model for continuous measurement under non-Markovian decoherence. We want to look at what would be effect of feedback control. We add feedback control to that. Then we can evaluate what would be the performance of feedback control when the decoherence is non-Markovian. This is not studied yet. And the last goal would be trying to do electronic spectroscopy with tunable observables. So thank you.
I wonder if you could say a few more words about how you determine the number of observables that you say you can reach with your continuum. You know, we have, of course, something very similar, but
yeah.
We look at it in a different way. Well, the way that we've thought about it is where we have a Gaussian measurement of conditional probability distribution, then what we have is basically we have a covariance matrix which tells us about the different directions in operator space that we have observed in this measurement. And in some sense, we gain some information about all observables at any time interval, except the signal to noise is really bad along some direction. So it's very hard for us to say we've measured this number of observables. We can only say something about the signal to noise with which we've measured. So I'm not sure what you mean.
So here is a bit different. Maybe I can go back. So what we do is that so you are changing observable in real time, right? So that's different. What we are suggesting here is that fixing the observable at the beginning. So for a fixed observable, do a continuous measurement.
I see.
So next time, vary that, and then do the continuous measurement. So it's a fix.
So you're measuring a fixed observable for some amount of time.
Right. Then
you take care of the apology
right.
for the next one.
Right.
So it's a slightly different.
Yes. An extension of this, which is interesting, if you have a multimode cavity, then you can measure them simultaneously. That would be next extension. But that's different from, well, it's a good idea to combine these two together. Okay.
Josh,
any
questions?
Yeah. Okay. So the first one is, I was a little bit confused when you said that by tuning the measurement strength, you could reduce back action and you might get something out of that, because in the end, you're just gonna have to integrate for longer. So I didn't quite understand.
Well, so back action comes from, back action comes from, How strong is your system is coupled to the probe, right? So when that coupling is weaker, so you have a weaker back action on the dynamics of the system.
But then the thermal dynamics will just be longer. So
because you have a weaker less information, right?
So I don't know if tuning that is going to help you.
Well, certainly there must be some optimal value of that to trade off between these two, right?
So the second question I had was, I thought the sort of coupled hierarchy of master equations, mm-hmm. master equations, is really fast. I don't know, at first glance it seems like it's probably the most important results is, you know, the mean or late night and some continuous measurements. But there's one thing that was kind of weird about it, and that is we have these kind of mixed Schrodinger Heisenberg equations. And so the equation of motion for the master equation at least were, was the commutator of Hamiltonian variables.
Here?
I think I was talking, well, this kind of has a two here, I guess.
The equation only?
The master equation, because you're only flat.
Okay, yeah, this
but
one.
Here, you've got this commutator of Hamiltonian, is on this other state here.
Well, okay, so you're asking what this sigma operator?
Yeah.
Well, these sigma operators are not, they're just some Hermitian operator. They are not density matrices. So you can read this equation in the form that we have our density matrix is rho, but we have extended the space. That's rho and all these sigma operator. And
does sigma have the same dimension at all? Sigma
yeah.
Sigma zero has the same dimensions as
well. Well, sigma zero, I just label sigma zero by rho. But yeah, the dimension has the same dimension, but they are not density matrix. They are just Hermitian operator.
They're traceless, or the trace can change?
It can change, right.
So how do you know when to stop, like, the normally operator?
Oh, how to sub, you mean yeah. At what tier, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the criteria, that this omega s, the say for a qubit is the frequency of the resonance, the frequency of the qubit. So we stop at n. Well, n is given at the level n as omega s divided by gamma. Gamma is the bandwidth of your environment. So when you have a closer to Markovian, means larger gamma, you need less number of these levels. If it is a more Markovian, you need to go on higher and higher levels. So there is a criteria to truncate it. At some point.
Is there like a bound you can put on the error induced truncating?
Yes, it's possible, but I haven't seen anyone do the data rigorously. Yeah.
Okay, well then, one more question. So this method is specific for that conflict of density.
This equation is for that. No, it's general. I go back here. The original formulation is only for this, but recently it's developed for this general parameterized spectral density. Basically, whatever function you pick, you can just expand it over this basis, if you call it basis somehow. So no, it's rather general. Yeah.
Your stochastic ones are for this case?
Yes. Yeah, general. Because, I mean, the stochastic part from... So when you vary this part, you only change the decoherence dynamics. But the stochastic part comes from how when we unravel the leakage part. And the leakage part is the same. Because I assume the reservoir is Markovian. I forgot to mention that. So the reservoir is still, I consider as a Markovian, right?
Okay, then let's thank both our speakers again.